This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 881, brought to you by iFanboy listeners like you.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much.
Hey, I'm Josh Flanagan, and I'm here with my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello, Josh. It's been a week.
You're not doing okay.
I'm not doing great.
All right.
I'm not doing great. I've got a little bit of a illness situation going on.
Yeah. I'll tell you something.
Yep.
I'm not super psyched about this right now.
What, the illness?
No, I just don't really feel like doing this.
The show?
Yeah. I know I'll be fine and I'll have fun, but right now, I'm just saying, I never say that. I never feel that, but
no,
I got up here and I was like,
ugh. You want to be watching basketball right
I
now.
I do, but also it's like 90 degrees. I'm back in this stupid office and I decided I was like, I'm not going to put my air conditioner in because it's only May. But then it was 90 for a couple of days and I just watched the temperature go up all day. And I'm just, you know.
You're not prepared. You forgot about climate change and all the stuff that goes with it.
I mean, it's just a mental health issue right now. It's just forget about climate change if you can. Or it's just like it's endemic to our species. One of the two. I can't tell.
At least you didn't have what I had this week, which was, you know, you hit a certain age and you're like you get, you know, the flu or a cold, a really bad cold, and you're laying there and you're thinking, is this it? You know, am I going to fall asleep and not wake up?
I've never thought that.
I do.
I'm
older
than
you. Get really sick and you feel
not
really
much.
Terrible.
Yes.
You're just like, I guess this is it. You all think that when you're 22, because at 22, immortality is keen in your mind. Mortality is a foreign concept. But when you're older, you're just like, I guess this could be it.
What I always try to think of is after it's gone, when you feel amazing.
Oh, sure.
Like a week later when you go, oh, I don't feel awful. This is amazing. You're just back to baseline. Before, baseline sucked, but now baseline's awesome.
By the way, this opening tells you how excited we are to talk about this week's comics. You know, you're talking about the mental illness of not thinking about all the things that are happening. But, you know, human beings have a hard time seeing beyond the moment they're in. So you get that point in time where you've been sick for days. You're just like, well, this is it. Like, I don't even remember not being sick. I guess this is how it's always going to be. That's how your brain deals with it. Because you can't think rationally, well, you know, I'll be fine in a week. But no, you're like, well, I'm just always going to feel terrible. And that's not what happened.
I thought I was the one with depression. Every week, one of us picks the book
that
I like
week.
The best.
When I swallow, it feels like I've got glass in my throat.
All right. We should mist you or something. The comic book that we like the best. This is the worst opening of the show ever.
It's not a good week of comics, so I'm not trying to get to the book.
I actually don't agree with that. It's
well,
just to preview do. What's going on. Every week, one of us picks the book they like the best in their stack of comics. That is called the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book, other comics that came out. There's a patron pick. We will answer mail if we have time. And God help us if we don't have time for that this week. There are spoilers about the books. Connor, apparently you had the unfortunate duty.
I had the pick. I ended up reading 12 books. I started the week with, I think, 8 on my list, and I ended up adding 4. Either I'd forgotten and missed or just added to the stack. There were books I liked. There were certainly books that I enjoyed reading, but a lot of them were just like, yeah, that was another good issue of that book. Or that was the least good issue of that book I've read, you know, like Clobbering Time. But, you know, when I finished my stack, I told you I wasn't sure what I was going to pick. I looked at a few comics. There's a couple of books that were in contention, and we're going to talk about them. But I ended up going back to Traveling to Mars, and there's actually a G in that. Traveling to Mars, number 6 from Ablaze. Ablaze.
Ablaze. Written
by Mark Russell with art by Roberto Dakar Melli. Apparently he has a nickname.
He really likes that off-road desert race, the Dakar rally. He's into it.
Gentili on letters. This is a very Italian book. This book, by the way, received 2 Eisner nominations, one for Best New Series and one for Best Writer from Mark Russell. Is this a series? I thought this was a miniseries.
I have a real problem keeping up with your non-front of diamond catalog Mark Russell stuff for whatever reason.
Well, I just subscribe to them on Comixology, so they just show up in my box.
And I think that that's the thing, is that I buy that first one, and then I don't even, like, I never think about it again. Even, like, I go through the list, and I just don't see it.
I would not see it. I have to subscribe.
I'm heartened to know that you enjoyed this, and I would like to
hear more. It's a bummer you didn't read this one, because this one I think you would have liked quite a bit.
I still can. I kind of remember the first issue. I couldn't believe you were up to 6. Couldn't believe it.
Because I subscribe after the first issue. I go, okay, I like that. Subscribe to series. And then it just shows up in my box every time.
When we recorded it and we stopped talking about the first issue, we moved on to whatever was next on the list, I never thought of it again.
I've been reading it the whole time. So this is the story of the guy with terminal cancer who's been shot into space by a corporation to go to Mars, because the first person who lands on Mars gets like mineral rights or whatever. So there's a corporate race to get someone to Mars. And so he's the one who's on his way.
You're not going to come back.
There's no other comic that I read where I feel both enlightened and depressed afterwards, like this book, because
that's about right.
It's a lot of this guy sitting in this ship contemplating his failures or the human race and what it means to be the cog in the corporate, like all the stuff that Mark Russell does, but in a slightly sadder tone than he does in other books. But well, my favorite part about this book, and this is actually my favorite part of, you know, comics all week, was this issue opens up and he's got some bogeys for the first time. There's some other ships coming up behind him and they're gaining on him. And this reminded me a lot of The Expanse. So he says, this is not like the movies where you can just sort of, you know, accelerate and pull a hard burn stop and have a shootout. Like, it's like, he's like, that's not what flying in space is. If flying in space is all, you use all your power to get into space, and then you use the rest of it's just inertia. He says, it's more like taking a raft down the Mississippi River than anything else, flying in space. So he said, they clearly used a hell of a lot of energy to catch me. They're going faster than I am. So eventually they're going to get to me before I get to Mars. And so what do I do? You know, there's not going to be a shootout in space. I can't maneuver. There's no evasive maneuvers here. No one's jumping into hyperspace to escape here. And so he and his handler at home figure out a way to stop these guys from getting to him and killing him. And it was a really sort of, you know, hard. We talked about hard sci-fi a couple of episodes ago on some show. It was a very hard sci-fi space battle in which, in the dumbest way possible, there's no blasters, there's no cannons. It's literally, he takes his fire extinguishers, puts these magnets on them, sets a little device to turn them on remotely, and he throws them at the other ships. The magnet attached to the ships, he turns the things on, and the inertia from the fire extinguisher shoots them off into space in the opposite directions. It was just really fun, cool, hard sci-fi.
Nice.
And I really liked it. It was not the whole book, but it was like the first half. I was like, that was a really fun... you can picture Mark Russell sitting down and figuring out, okay, you know, physics-wise, how does this work? How does this happen? And it was really fun and cool. And the rest of it was sort of similar of him thinking back to his childhood and learning a lesson about saving little animals. Like, it's just all been very interesting, and there's a reason why I got some Eisner nominations. I really like it. It's a really good, solid book, and I'm sad you didn't read it. I'm actually very sad.
I'm sorry. Ongoing, as far as we know. I mean he's going to die eventually.
What does anything mean? Best new series implies ongoing, but what does that mean anymore in comics? Mm-hmm. You know? We're 6 issues in. I don't know how much longer we can have these ruminations on life and death and everything. So something's going to have to happen eventually. He's going to have to get to Mars or something. Then again, the book's called Traveling to Mars, not called Arriving at Mars. So who knows?
Right. Well, there's all sorts of things you can do to break the expectations on that. So this is the one where he's got Stevie Ray Vaughan's hat?
Yes.
All right. Yes. I remember that.
The guy with terminal cancer who used to work at a pet shop who has been sent into space. And his family gets money, and being in space will slow the progression of his disease, so he won't die as quickly, and et cetera, et cetera. It's very good. Right. And you will like the little sci-fi.
I'm sure.
In the middle.
I was captivated by just the description of it, so I'm good to go.
Yeah, you'll like it.
It wasn't a choice. It was just an oversight.
I understand. I'm going to have to email you every time one of these books comes out. Did you subscribe to the book, Josh?
Yeah.
Doctor Strange 429. I did like this one. You told me, you're like, what about Doctor Strange? I said, that was good. And it was probably in the second or third position.
I think this probably would have been my pick of the week, but I actually really enjoyed books that I read this week, certain from Marvel, but basically all the books I read this week from Marvel.
One DC
so that's
book.
Not
it was
not
a very
hard.
Good week. It was all Marvel.
I started to read a DC book and I was like, nah.
I had two DC books, actually. The Patreon pick was a DC book.
So it's kind of a one-shot story. And I had actually forgotten that there's a murder mystery that happened in the first issue because the last issue didn't deal with it at all. So what we have here is the, I guess, annual or at least semi-regular parley day where Doctor Strange, he goes and he has a meeting with the Dread Dormammu. And the bookend of it is that the very first thing you see is a happy family on one page, and the dad is getting himself dressed up, and he's like, it's promotion day, and the kids are all excited, and the wife is happy about it, you know, and you're like, oh, something's going to go happen at his job, and from his little sort of regular middle-class house in Yonkers. And then what you find out is that in order to be on the mortal plane, Dormammu must have a human host, and by being in that host, he kills it.
Yeah.
And Strange knows it, and he hates it, but he also knows that the hosts are like members of Dormammu's church cult, whatever it is, they're followers of him. So they volunteer themselves to do it. You know, basically, this is just verbal sparring between Dormammu and Steve as they walk. Steve, I don't know what that's about.
His friends call him Steve.
They walk through Manhattan, you know, and then
it's a yearly parlay. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, they got to make sure that, I don't know, that things are in order as they understand them to maintain the balance, whatever it is. And the whole thing is there's a trick that happens that Steve you know, he finds a way to get the guy free, and you know, it pisses off. And as we're going through it, we're like, well, he's beaten Dormammu a lot of times, and Dormammu is not
it ends up being almost like a greatest hits.
Yeah,
they go through their adventures together, and they all have editor's notes, and they all take place throughout the history of Doctor Strange. He's like, yeah, but you know, I beat you then, and I beat you when you did this, and I beat you when you did that, and they're all flashbacks. This is like a total Jed MacKay special.
Yes.
Where it dives deep into the Marvel history. It takes something interesting and fun, and the idea of these guys parlaying once a year where it's like, you know, they don't try to hurt each other or attack each other. They have a parlay, and you know, it was fun. The only tiny minute nitpick, and I like the Pasquale Ferrer a lot, is I think Doctor Strange, I call him Doctor Strange, his hair is weird. That weird, like, it's not a widow's peak. It's like it comes to like a...
Okay, like I see it.
Almost like it's like a like the letter 3 on top of his head.
The little Mickey Mouse ears.
The letter 3, the number 3. Jesus, this cold medicine is really working.
Steve. Oh. Yeah, I think it's interesting is that I've been noticing it in these Jed MacKay books is that like the Doctor Strange dialogue is now straight out of the 60s. Like for a little while, he was just talking like a normal person. And it's really interesting because for a little while, we couldn't tell the difference between him and Tony Stark. They looked the same. They same sounded the same.
Yeah.
But we have returned Doctor Strange to this, you know, I don't know if it's
bombastic,
mystical. Yeah. Like no one talks like this.
Yeah.
You know, he comes home and he's like, I am returned, darling. Was your gambit a success, my love? Well, I surgically removed a man's faith. By the way, that is a fantastic sentence and concept. I surgically removed a man's faith. Not sure how I feel about that, but regardless, he will live. How was your day? Like, it's just, you know, and then that sort of last page of the thing is that Cleo opens a, is it Clea? Cleo?
Clea.
Clea. Opens up an invitation to her mother's wedding, and there's a great, like, overdramatic face on Doctor Strange, Steve. You know, you know, it's all way, the whole thing is overdramatized, and it fits it so well, and it's really fun.
You know, for the life of this show, we always said we like Doctor Strange. He's a fun spice in the Marvel Universe. And then somewhere around the Brian K. Vaughan phase, when he did that miniseries, he sort of came back as, and then he got added to the New Avengers. And I don't know the timeline and all that stuff. It could have been back either. But he went from being someone who would occasionally show up in things to becoming a main player. And then he's had a book fairly regularly for years now.
They've
all been really good.
They have. It's been a good long line of Jason Aaron to Mark Waid to whoever did the last one to Jed MacKay.
And they've been different. They've been good and different.
This is just, it's been fun for a while, and I usually look forward to these books. And I just, this was a really fun single issue, and I really enjoyed it. The backup story, which I didn't really know who the character was. I read it. It was fine. It wasn't my favorite art, but I think there was a little bit of always with Nico.
That's right.
From the Runaways, and it was fine. It was just a couple of pages. Just take a little backup there.
I would say if you are at all Doctor Strange curious, this would be a good issue to pick up because it sort of gives you the tone. It gives you the feel.
You would also think that this marriage that he has now, and this isn't new. Clea has been around for a very long time. She showed up in the comics, and then, you know, they finally got a chance to be together again. Now they are, quote unquote, happily married. And that has to end somehow. But it works for it right now, I think.
Sure.
Zelda's not part of this anymore. They moved all those people off to Strange Academy.
This is better for it. I like this. Because she has her own secrets, yeah. Right? She killed the guy that everything's built around. So she's keeping this major secret.
We don't know that.
I thought we saw it happen. Didn't we see her kill him?
I don't think so.
That's
I think it was strongly hinted at.
Anyway, the point is, if she did do it, that would be the thing that blows up and
sends
them apart again. So that's like hanging over the whole thing. It's very well done.
Yeah, I really dug it as a book. I also found myself very happy with the, so I guess the conclusion of Amazing Spider-Man number 920.
Yeah, the conclusion of the, what is this called? I don't even know the name of the story.
The guy. Whatever.
First of all, first page. I was like, who is this middle-aged career woman from 1984? It's like, oh, it's Miss Marvel.
Oh.
Romita doesn't have a good handle on her.
You know, it's even worse than that. That page is actually, it's a page of Kamala Khan interviewing for a job at Oscorp engineer, whatever it's called. And she gets, and I was like, how the fuck she get in the door?
Right.
She didn't put her name on the resume. She doesn't do any of the jobs. It's like, that's not how the world works at all. That's more unbelievable than superpowers.
Seth Wells hasn't had to have a regular job in a while.
I guess not.
I just don't care about this villain at all. And so there's a lot of villain gobbledygook in this issue. There's a lot of things that happen.
Yeah, but the thing is the villain isn't the story. I mean, like, it's the way that we get to the thing where, you know, Mary Jane existed a long time without Peter and started this other life. Right. And the sort of flashback to understanding all that stuff, how Peter has been acting the whole time. I liked all of that. And I thought that the solution that happened at the end, leading to the sort of big event at the very end, was all really well done. The switcheroo happened.
Well, yeah.
Really? Well, I don't even want to, not even want to get, but either way, as like a thing, I really enjoyed all those moving pieces. I also really enjoyed the page where Peter and the Fantastic Four have not been getting along well, and they show up in a ridiculous vehicle that apparently rebuilt for the occasion, which was
fantastic. He's really smart, but is he really fast?
Oh, it doesn't.
Just because he's smart doesn't mean he can build a vehicle in 5 minutes.
You know, but they show up and they're like, you've been our friend for a long time.
He's got droids, whatever, they can do it for him.
Yeah, I thought that was really... So to me, a lot of this was like the villain was whatever. I thought there's a lot of good Spider-Man gosh stuff in here.
There was.
And it made me happy.
You know, we gave a spoiler warning, so we'll spoil it. So actually, this was in contention for Pick of the Week, and I'll tell you why. So at the end of the issue, Miss Marvel gets killed. Quotes. Mm-hmm. It got leaked last week or the week before, I don't remember what. You know, caused a big firestorm on the internet and all the usual places. And I'd read all that, so I was expecting that going in. And then here... Mary Jane gets stabbed. We know that's been like the fear of people for a while that they're going to kill Mary Jane off. So I bought it. Uh-huh. I was like, oh shit, was that all a ruse?
Yeah.
For like 2 pages, I was like, oh shit, they really killed Mary Jane. I bought it. They totally got me. And then it turns out it's Miss Marvel using her shape-shifting abilities. But they got me, and I'm a veteran comic book reader. Now, granted, I was on a lot of cold medicine. And Wednesday was pretty bad in terms of how sick I was. We're going to get to that later on when we talk about another book. But I was just like, wow, they totally did it. And then it's revealed... it was actually her. I don't understand how Mary Jane looked like Miss Marvel. I guess she didn't. I guess there were two Mary Janes.
They just hit her. Yeah, no, there's just two. I will also say, though, that I guess it got me. I didn't realize it was her, but like when they revealed that it was Kamala, like I had a feeling. I was like, oh, no, because she's a great character.
She will be back in time for her movie, for the grand return.
But like, you know, the sort of
it's a difference in Doctor Strange dying. It's going to be the fact that, you know, they tease the end, the death of Kamala Khan miniseries, and then there'll be a Miss Marvel number one the month the movie comes out. It's a lock.
But taking it on its own, I thought it was a, like, you know, for a moment that we know is fleeting and not true. They did a great job. I mean, this is great, John Romita.
It's great, John Romita. My poking at his anachronisms isn't me knocking the art. The art's terrific.
Those are features, not bugs.
I kept waiting for Paul to be revealed to be part of an early 90s soul acapella group with that facial hair he's got going on. Maybe he's the guy that talks real low in the songs. They got rid of the kids, as we predicted they would.
Yeah. Can't have them. Which was also
this was a good issue.
Lots of melodrama. Big time, old school Stan Lee Romita melodrama.
Right.
I felt like this brought that. Like, this would make you throw your suit in a trash can and walk away.
Right.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think it brought...
I was looking forward to a new... Like, I haven't been loving this particular bad guy scenario, so I've been waiting for a new scenario. Because this is the only Zeb Wells arc I haven't, like, loved so far.
Yeah. But to me, like, this feels like what Amazing Spider-Man should feel like.
The very last comic I read this week was Clobbering Time number 3, which is the spot reserved for my most anticipated comic.
Yeah.
Although that doesn't really work anymore because now I read half the books on Tuesday and half on Wednesday, so it doesn't really work. But it was my last Wednesday book. And I was waiting. I was like, please knock my socks off because nothing has yet. And, you know, it gave me Ben Grimm butt.
Yeah.
Which, you know, of all of the three issues, this is my least favorite. He teams up with Doctor Strange in this issue. And it was not as fun as the Wolverine or the Hulk ones. But I enjoyed it.
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I didn't dislike it. It just wasn't as good as the other ones. And it was fine.
There's a bit where basically Strange gets almost killed. And there's a elixir of life, you know, and it gets smashed and Thing has to flick a boogie of it off his hand and it goes straight into his, you know, Strange's mouth and it saves his life. There's a bookend of there with Aunt Petunia and I don't know what the uncle's name is, but, you know, they're in a restaurant and the uncle keeps taking selfies and it's funny. I enjoyed it. But like, if nothing else, like the art in this is fantastic.
Oh, so
and
good.
We do need to come back to the butt. I turn the page and I see anybody who is married is going to recognize this scene. Mm-hmm. One of the spouses hasn't been the other, was just standing there, butt akimbo.
Well, she's blind, so he could be doing that all the time. She'd have no idea.
Yeah, but either way, people do it anyway. And eventually, if you're married, you can learn to have a sort of blindness anyway. And, you know, it's dripping. And I just thought, I've never even considered seeing this. I've never thought about Ben Grimm's butt.
Well, you can't because then it leads to other things you have to question and then the whole house falls down.
My friend Patrick and I had a conversation about this and it's like, he definitely has to use a bidet, right? Like,
or just how does the marital situation work?
Totally.
Falls apart.
So the best part of this though is that, and this is like deep comic book storytelling stuff that I picked up on and loved. There's that shot, which is totally homey and I'd never seen it. I was like, this is really interesting. He picks out his little trunks. And then over the next, like, he puts them on. You can see him snapping them into place. You know, like, there's this whole little domestic thing that happens with his little trunks. And apparently, like, are those like his underwear?
I was like, is he sleeping in trunks that are exactly the same trunks as he wears outside?
I mean, I'm guessing he has to wear
those. He only has the one outfit?
Yeah, I mean, he can't have a soft cotton.
No, but I assume his sleepwear is also unstable molecules. But couldn't it be a different design? Can he get some flowers on there?
He wants to be able to jump up. You know, at any point, I liked the device of, you know, like the villain, whoever it is looking at him through little tiny portals in space and time. And then he opens up one that he falls through. And that page where he steps in and then falls through, it doesn't make sense at first. And then you realize what it is and you're like, that's amazing. Like, it's just beautiful.
Well, then there's the big black page at the end, which is the tiny, tiny thing falling in the back. And, you know, that's a use of scale we don't often see in comics like that.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I like the Doctor Strange a lot. His hair is nicer here. Mm-hmm. It's good.
But he was still a pretty arch Doctor Strange, too. He wasn't, you know, he was hammed it up, and I like it.
For sure.
Punisher number 12. I don't think it has a real number to it. This is the last issue of the Jason Aaron, Jesus Ayiz, and Paul Azaceta. Frank Castle as the Hand of the, is it the Fist? Yeah.
Fist of the Beast.
Whatever.
Fist of the Beast.
I am not the world's biggest Frank Castle fan. I think I've said this before. But each issue as this went on, I really came to appreciate it.
Yeah, you've talked about almost every issue. There's no links numbering in this one.
And I think it's a really interesting examination of this thing that is Frank Castle. So the whole time we're like, there's this fantastical, ridiculous story where, you know, they've made him the messenger of the beast and he's been groomed to be a killer since forever, but it's really just, you know, it's part of who he is and whatever. But these flashbacks and then how his wife interpreted him during that time and how he does, like, you can see his, I don't know, some combination between the words and art, or as they call it, comic books.
I don't know, some kind of combination of story and character that I really like.
It
here.
Really, I actually thought that we, I don't think that the character necessarily grew, maybe realized stuff or accepted or was stuff that he already knew, but our understanding of the character, at least, you know, temporarily within this context, did grow. You don't often get a lot of extra cognizance of these characters in any way, and I just thought it was a dumb setup, but it ended up being very meaningful in the context of the thing.
Did it end with the slate being wiped, or is he still the Hand of the Fist?
No. So he gets like the Avengers to like, hey, you're fucking killing everybody. You can't do that. So they capture him and he's, you know, in the basement with Stephen Strange again. Can't get away from him this week. Steve is everywhere. And basically they're like, well, we're going to let the guys figure out what we're going to do. So he, you know, talks to Logan and he talks to Captain America and he talks to Natasha and he talks to Moon Knight. And I'll just give it, like, he basically disintegrates himself, sort of like he kills himself. And then, right. You know, we cut and he seems to be in some, it's like he's in hell and he's helping souls, ghosts, who knows? I don't know, but he's kind of dead, but he's kind of not. And he's doing his thing. It was really good. It was way better than it had any right to be. And it was like, oh, there's Jason Aaron. That's Jason Aaron in there. I think it was a really perfect for him. And
well, yeah, he's just one of the best Punisher writers, right?
Oh, yeah.
Going way back, way, way back.
Yep.
Him and Brett Ennis, the best modern
It was a really good 12 issues, and it got better as I go. I'm really glad I read it.
I can never recall. Are you also a big Rocketeer fan?
I like the idea of the Rocketeer. Okay, I don't really care about the property. It's you two. But if we're talking about like Dave Stevens, like that art is undeniable.
Okay, so our old co-host Ron and I, we're big Rocketeer fans. Always excited for a new Rocketeer book. And this was a one-shot special, simply titled The Rocketeer.
Which was difficult to find.
Did you read it?
Yeah, I did read it.
Okay.
Yeah. Adam Hughes? Are you kidding me?
This was three stories. And I'll be honest with you, about three-quarters way through, I was like, oh, this is going to be the pick of the week. Mm-hmm. And then something happened, which we'll get to. So first story was written by Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo. They wrote the movie, the only movie there's ever been, which is strange considering all the IP being mined right now. Adam Hughes drew it, and how often does that happen? And this is a fun story in which, you know, Cliff, the Wizard Rocketeer, recounts his friendship with Amelia Earhart. And I thought it was fun and sweet, and it was, you know, it was a good amount of Adam Hughes. It was like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And it wasn't like
8 pages.
This guy hasn't drawn in a while, or he's phoning in or whatever. I was like, oh, it's fucking perfect. It's Adam Hughes. Like, I think I've seen stuff he did, and this was better than that. Like,
it's really good, Adam Hughes.
It's really good. Like, if you're going to talk about somebody who can live up to the legacy that Dave Stevens left behind, I couldn't tell you a better choice. I mean,
yes.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah, on the sexy cheesecake side, like a little bit, but mostly just really clean and beautiful cartooning. Oh.
There's a page digitally, 6. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the reveal shot of Amelia Earhart.
Yeah.
But that panel, the bottom panel. Oh my God.
Look how it's curved. Like, we're under the guy's throat. The people curve you down to the left corner.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tower takes you up into the plane. So that's the way it takes your eye in that sweeping motion.
The chin, like, looks wizened and like,
he's just so good.
It's crazy. That whole page is magnificent.
Yeah.
She's breaking the panels with her elbows. There's a silhouette shot, and not only a silhouette shot, but like Cliff is like pulling on his jacket.
His acting.
So
great acting. Yeah. He is criminally good.
He's so fucking good.
Yeah. And then look at the next page 8 when he's, you know, the great soaring shot of Rocketeer plus the panel above where he's looking at the helmet. It's just
like the shape
good.
Of Cliff's body. Like you get instantly know what like kind of build he has.
Yeah, he's not like he's not a superhero. He's just a lanky dude.
Exactly. And it's not like, you know, like a lot of people can only kind of draw one body type. But, you know, and you can be like, oh, wow, he draws really pretty girls. And he does in like that classic sort of, you know, 30s pinup kind of way that he does. But that's not the only anatomy he's really fucking good at.
Yeah, he's really good at everything.
Yeah.
I still remember as a kid when he drew Justice League a couple issues and I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
What am I feeling inside? I was feeling a lot of things. It was very complicated.
Sure.
Fire was on the team, but also I was like, this art's really good. So the next story involves Cliff late to a date. As always, his girlfriend, Betty, wants to go see this speaker talk about science stuff. And she's given him a fedora as a present. So he's going to wear the fedora. And of course, everything goes wrong. There's a heist at the museum where the talk is. The speaker is a very handsome scientist with round glasses. There's a big fight. And the Rocketeer ends up getting help from the scientist who has a whip. And he's Indiana Jones, but not really, but is.
But he is. And then he gets the hat. Because the beginning, he's like, hey, this hat. And I was like, what the fuck's that about?
And she's like, you look better with a hat than he does. And
the hat changes color. I don't know if you noticed, but it's brown and then it becomes green, which is weird.
Yeah, and then the shadow is Indiana Jones.
Whatever. That was kind of dumb, but it was kind of fun.
But it was like, fun.
You know, whatever. Who cares? The dog is the star of this story. The dog, Cliff, I don't know why. Oh, I see what's happening.
The beginning is great. The dog is driving the car.
Cliff has strapped a bone to the wheel. Right. And so the dog, who's kind of a bulldog and becomes more of a bulldog as it goes on, whatever. But Cliff is in the back, and I believe that he's rocket packeting.
Yeah, if you look at the second page, quickly. You can see the side shot. He's so late to the date he has, he's having the dog steer while he rockets the truck. Mm-hmm. And I don't know a lot about dogs. I know this is a bad idea. And that ends up happening where the dog gets distracted and turns his head and the whole thing goes.
Look at the second page of this story. And there's the side shot. You can see the car is beautiful, by the way. And then you have an inset shot that is a continuation. Who drew this second story? This is Craig Cermak. I know that.
I've heard the name before.
Laura Martin coloring.
Kelvin Mao on the story. Good story.
Inset of the panel where the truck is that extends from the back of the guy's coat. It's almost not a panel because it cuts the existing panel. Mm-hmm. The dog looks to his left and sees a beautiful poodle, falls in love, swerves the car. By the way, that was inevitable, Cliff. Yes. I know a lot about dogs. It's not even the last thing the dog does. He brings the dog into the talk.
Yeah.
Dog, you watch my shit under the table. Dog does it. That's all about this dog. Sorry, I love the dog.
So I finished the second story and I was like, all right, we're two for two. If the third story isn't any good, we're out of here for pick of the week. And it's written by Robert Windham and drawn by Jay Lee. And first of all, we finally answered the question, who's the slower artist, Adam Hughes or Jay Lee? It's Jay Lee.
Can you imagine the editor going, who do you got on this book? It's Jay Lee and Adam Hughes.
So Jay Lee's story is only 4 pages, and so which is half of Adam Hughes' story. It's beautiful. I've never seen him draw like this, this kind of character, this kind of scenario. I really liked his Rocketeer. But it wasn't really a story.
No.
It was more like a scene.
Not even.
And so I finished it. I was like, well, I mean, I can't really give it the pick of the week. But
I think you can.
I mean, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous 4 pages.
4 pages. And then the rest of it is pure gold. I wasn't even thinking it was the pick of the week until we got to talking about it. And I really started looking at these panels. Oh, man. What a treat. And it's just a one shot. You could and should go out and pick this. We put this in the short section, everyone.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, because originally, we'll get to why in a second.
Yeah.
There's a couple of good pinups with Phil Noto pinup and Adam Hughes Kickstarter cover and a Jay Lee cover.
This is joyous. This.
I'm always so happy when they do these.
Yeah. I like the Rocketeer in comics because the story is going to be what the story is. It's a little like Usagi Yojimbo. Like, you're there for the experience of the thing. You're not expecting, you know, like the story to blow you away. It's you want to spend a little time in
absolutely. World. It's not like you're reading Watchmen. It's not some intricately plotted masterpiece. It's a fun pulpy adventure serial. That's kind of what I want. I mean, that's what Indiana Jones is, not the most intricately written thing ever. It's really fun, though.
But because of, like, it's a skeleton on which you can hang really fun comic book art. That's what, like, all the art in these tends to be fun because they, I don't know, I feel like artists really want to step up when they're working in the Dave Stevens legacy. Yeah. And, you know, you get to live in this pulpy, you know, 1930s. You know, it's just fun to watch people draw that. And then the man flying with a jetpack. We'll never get over being interested in the man with a jetpack.
Oh, we loved it in the 80s.
Yeah.
Every kid wanted a fucking jetpack.
And a ninja star.
And we didn't realize we'd probably burn our feet. But whatever, it looked cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Finally, Alien 2. Alien number 2. not Aliens, which is doesn't have a 2, but it's a fine James
Cameron. If that came out today, the S would be a 2 in the title.
I don't even want to. Don't even. Just shut up.
I'm just saying that's what would happen. It would be Aliens, and the S would be a 2 in the typography.
All right, so Declan Shalvey wrote this one. Actually, look at the cover. There's a 20th Century Studios logo in the corner.
Yeah, that was the corner.
I didn't notice it before, but it's like a little different. Doesn't bother me at all. Declan Shalvey writing this one, drawn by Andrea Brocardo. This is a pretty straightforward alien story. You got some people, there's a small group, and they're stranded somewhere on this little moon. They find some alien shit, and they're like, what is this? Then Weyland-Yutani buys their company, shows up, takes over. A couple of people do some real stupid shit.
It's, you like the Rocketeer, you want your alien stories to follow a very similar formula.
Oh, 100%.
You want...
Where are you going?
A dumb person going, what's this? Let me take my mask off and touch it.
Oh.
That's what you want. It makes you happy. It follows a formula.
Man, they pulled the face hugger out of the backpack, and I was like, ugh. It got me. What is this? It says, what the shit is that? And I was like, oh, dude, that's not good. And then, of course, like, he wakes up and the face hugger's off him and, you know, this isn't good. And the other people are like, what happened? He's like, I don't know. I don't feel great. And I was like, here it comes. I want them to hit every one of those beats. And they did it. God damn it. They did it real good. And the spaceships are great in this. Yeah, I'm down with it. This isn't like those latter Alien movies. This isn't Prometheus. This is just no like exploring the nature of man and beast. No. Alien kills motherfuckers who do dumb shit and kills other people who happen to be around the dumb shit motherfuckers.
Young Ridley Scott and James Cameron understood the assignment. Mm-hmm. And that was the assignment. It was not to go too deeply into the heart of man. It was just to have dumb people get eaten by aliens because their own hubris.
Philip Kennedy Johnson, he got a little into hubris, but it was still fun. Declan Shalvey just leaned right into it. This is what it is, and I'm here for it. I support this.
So those are the books we want to talk about. Patreon.com/iFanboy. All the patrons of the show get to vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, we had a tight race. Early on, The Rocketeer was in the lead up until like the last 3 hours of voting. And so when I was putting together the rundown, I had The Rocketeer and the patron pick slot, and I had DC Pride in the short section. And the last second, DC Pride took over the lead and didn't give it up. That's why The Rocketeer ended up in the short section, simply because I was too lazy to rejigger the entire thing.
Yeah.
Probably should have been in the long section. Anyway, the winner was DC Pride 2023, number one, the 100-page celebration of Pride Month. Happy Pride, everybody. And this is 10 stories and a tribute to Rachel Pollack, featuring many pinups and a long intro by Phil Jimenez, featuring very many of the LGBTQ characters in DC Universe and creators as well. You know, these anthology things are always a crapshoot. At 100 pages and 10 stories, I'm happy if like three are good, just to be honest with you. Because I go with low expectations for these things. It doesn't matter what the subject matter is. If there's 10 stories. If three are good, I'm like, well, that's all right.
I told Connor that I would like the patrons to know that I believe 100 pages is too much for a patron pick. It's too much.
Because 2 hours before the show, I said, you got to read this 100-page book.
I was like, that time is booked, dude.
They like that. We may have to consider the rules, but we'll deal with that. So, all right. So the first story, and I'm not going to go through every story, but there's a couple worth highlighting here. The first story, Love's Lightning Heart, is written by Grant Morrison and Hayden Sherman. Is that the artist?
Yes.
This was one of those things I talked about earlier where I was reading this. This was actually, I read this on Tuesday, and Tuesday was the worst day for my illness. And so I could not wrap my head around this story.
It wasn't the illness's fault.
Okay. I had a real hard time with it. I don't know what happened with Grant Morrison. Like, the first volume of his Green Lantern book was awesome. The second volume was like this story.
Yes.
Where they've gone into the deep end on their, you know, consciousness, and I don't think I can follow them there.
I don't know who the characters were.
They're multiverse versions of Green Lantern and Flash, who are in love. No,
I get it, and it's fine.
Yeah.
So this is going to be my thing about most of these stories, and I don't really know the intention other than to feature LGBTQ characters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what the point is. We're just doing a story that features, the thing here is that in these other versions, then the Flash and Green Lantern are a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, but I don't know what that says. I don't know what that says about, is that like a celebration on the part of Pride, or is it like, I don't know. I don't know what the point is other than be like, look, these guys are gay. Okay. It just doesn't seem very significant to me. And I don't know, because I don't have the perspective to be like, maybe somebody else is like, I really needed to see that. It gave me validation. I don't know. But I felt like through a lot of these stories, it was just like, look at these guys. These are gay too. And that's not particularly enlightening. I'm terrified that I'm going to sound horrible here, but I don't think I am. I know firmly where I stand in the camp of these things and my support for people to be who they are. But, you know, that story, I was like, well, why am I reading this? Like, it just, like, is the premise that there's some science shit going on and it turns out that they love each other. Okay.
That's the hard thing about a short story is it doesn't give you a lot to work with.
I'm not going to give Grant Morrison earned the right for me to expect more.
Right.
I want to know why. I want to know. It can be anything. It's not up to me what's in here. But I did have a hard time connecting with things because I was trying to figure out why we were doing it. Is it just to say we're putting out a Pride book? And maybe that's enough.
If you skip ahead to the Robin, Tim Drake story, I think there was much more of a why there in which it was.
Yes.
Robin and Connor Hawk, we'll get to that in a second, talking because they both are, well, Connor's asexual and Tim is bisexual and discussing coming out and, you know, why they didn't lean on each other and how it all worked with Oliver and Bruce. And like, that was much more of a, there was more of a why there. And I totally am on the same page. Like, to me, it's much more powerful to have a story than a speech. Do you know what I mean? Like, tell me a story with these characters and reveal something about them and make them interesting and relatable as opposed to just speechify it. Like, I thought the Midnighter, what's his name, story was much more of a speech than a story.
It was not good, and I love those characters.
And I get sometimes the speech is important, but I'm much more connected with the Robin story because it was a story.
He was human.
Yeah, I felt like I learned something about the characters, and I felt like I related to the characters. And that was probably the best one of the bunch. Was that the Cantwell one?
No, Cantwell did the last story, I'm flipping my way to it. Is it the...
They need to put in this title who the characters in the story are. Oh, the Cantwell one was the Superman Constantine one, which I liked.
Yeah.
Yes. That one was just sort of like, hey, we're just telling a story with these characters who happen to be also bisexual. Everyone's bisexual in DC. No one is allowed to actually be gay. It's about love because Constantine's, you know, he's rescuing the soul of a guy he used to love. But it's not about, you know, hey, look at us. We're bisexual. It's just, it was happened to be about, like, it was everything you want in a special like this in that story. I thought it was really well done.
Yes. They said it was Oliver, and I was like, this has something to do with Oliver Queen, but it's not. It's just a different
Oliver. No, it's just some kind of Oliver.
I don't think you can use that name. It means too much. Because then also at the very end, he said, you really think, you know, Superman would have done this for me? And he goes, for Oliver, probably. Then that made me think, wait, so is it Green Lantern or Green Arrow? Because the fact is, like, I don't fucking know if Green Arrow was alive in the DCU. Like, that's the truth. Right. I went, I don't know, because he's in this weird, that book they just started, he's off in other universes, or maybe he is dead. I mean,
it's a loaded name. You're right. It could have just been Bob.
Right. Like, if they had called him Bruce, you'd be like, you can't do that. Bruce is taken in DC.
If it had been Bruce, it would have been too, you're right. I didn't think about that, but you're right. So, my only problem with the Robin story was, Connor Hawke shows up, and I don't know what the character model they're using, but that is not Connor Hawke.
I was like, is he way different than I thought?
And so for like 3 pages, they didn't use his name. And I was getting actively angry. I was like, you're failing the basic premise of comics here. You need to tell me the name of the person who this is. This is some guy from Titans Academy I don't know anything about. Like, I was getting angry.
It was your first instinct that it was Connor, though, right?
No.
Oh, see, I knew from this outfit, I think.
No, I didn't know anything because I was like, who is this person? Because that's not the model face that Connor Hawke's face. That's not his face. And he's not wearing Green Arrow costume anymore. So... I was like, who the fuck is this? You got to tell me who I'm talking about here. And then he goes, thanks, Connor. I was like, oh, that's Connor. What? Anyway, it didn't detract from the fact the story was good.
It was a little wordy and people standing around.
Yeah, but I thought the sentiment was good.
I also thought the character acting was really good in it, too.
Yeah.
And there's a second, is it the second page? Yeah, second page is sort of a cutaway of the boat. They're cleaning up, I guess. I don't know. They're cleaning up a fight. But it's one of those sort of things where the panel shows them at different points in time standing around, like cleaning up guns. It's a nice panel.
This has nothing to do with... this book necessarily, but how do you feel about bearded hipster Alan Scott?
I was like, that dude is not talking like somebody who came up in the 30s and 40s. Right. That story, no.
I'm not talking about the story. I just mean in general, because he has the beard now, which, okay, fine. But then at some point, I don't think it's in this story, but somewhere else in the book, they gave him like Brooklyn barista hair. And I was like, just because he's gay, he's still from the 1940s.
Yes.
You know, let's chill out here. Oh, it's on page 77. It's pinup. I was like, he looks like he's serving me coffee.
I think there is a habit of taking these characters and saying, okay, this character is LGBTQ in some way, and then making them look fabulous.
Yeah.
In a way that to me feels like it feels a little stereotypical. Like, it's like all of a sudden everybody has great hair and knows how to dress themselves.
You grew up with some non-fabulous LGBTQ people.
I certainly did. I was surrounded by them.
They exist outside of the outside the cities.
Yes, exactly. And it's to me like that a little bit smack. And I know that there's a whole culture of things and there's different symbology and things like that. So like the shot of, you know, Catman and whoever this dude is like in bed looking like,
I hate that character. Yeah.
Looking like a Tom of Finland drawing. Like I get it. Like that's the thing. But there's a fabulousness that gets added to these characters and they all of a sudden they have haircuts that they didn't have before. And it's like, well, if somebody, you know, it's possible that when you were in I'm going to get myself in trouble, but I guess it's possible if you're in a closet, you are coding yourself in a certain way. And then when you come out, then you're, you know, more able to sort of be yourself in your image or whatever. But it just feels very conspicuous in these books.
Look at page 77, Alan Scott. I mean,
yeah, I saw it. I didn't notice it before, but.
You know, I skipped a couple of stories characters I didn't care about, but for the most part, there was a couple, I think there was, if you take the Robin story, the Superboy Constantine story, I thought the Batwoman story with the woman who's from Lazarus Planet, I don't know her name is, but I thought that was solid.
Steel, what her name? Is that Steel? Is that her
Steel's
name?
Niece story. Was solid. Like, there was like 3 or 4 solid stories.
I thought that the one, I was a little lost, but the story about the Steel Force, I think it's a she. I don't know. I think I got that. I got the sense that it was a trans kid.
Which one?
The Flash. She's got the Still Force.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jules, whatever. I don't know the character. Mm-hmm. I like the science of that one. I like the drawing. I like the feeling and the mood of it. The character was kind of interesting because apparently, I think, you know, maybe like a from a farm, I guess, you know, like a different kind of culture coming from. It was kind of interesting, you know, and then how the other Flash was sort of, you know, but then they go out for fabulous dancing afterwards. And I was like, all right, that's, I struggled with most of these stories to a certain extent because it just felt like shallow imagery as a stand-in for meaningful conversations about diversity or anything like that. And maybe that's what you could expect out of a DC comic book that is, you know, a bunch of short stories. But I was like, I don't know. I think I expect more, but I don't know.
So what are you rating it? Ratings?
I thought there was a lot of strong art in it. Mm-hmm. Like I can look at any given page and there's interesting things that are happening on, on many of them. 2.75. I thought it was going to be awful from start to finish and it wasn't.
All right.
Awful.
I'm going to give it a 3.25. Mm-hmm. There was enough stories in here that I didn't, I've read other 100-page anthologies from DC or whatever that are just like a slog. And this wasn't, there was enough here that I was enjoying.
I mean, if anything else, I found it sort of interesting from a, you know, sociology perspective. Just like, what are we going to say here? What is it? You've got a chance to convey something. What is it you're going to try to do that? And I don't think it was all necessarily successful, but it is interesting.
And in it's that not way. A continuing book, so we're not going to talk about it for sticking with it or not. Patreon.com/iFanboy is how you can vote. Every patron gets a vote. And that's how that you directly support the show. If you enjoy the show, any of the shows we do many shows every month. Many of those shows were unlocked by the patrons. And if you feel like joining up to support the show, keep the lights on, keep the bills paid, we do appreciate that. We are weeks away from announcing a fairly sizable revamping of the patron rewards because, as we've been talking about, Patreon got rid of the stretch goals, which is how we've been doing things previously. And so it's going to be pretty substantial. And so we'll have an announcement for that pretty soon. We just finally finished the designs we needed to create and we're good to go. So look for that soon. Ephemera.threadless.com is our t-shirt store. We've got 12 designs. We just had a sale last weekend for Memorial Day. A bunch of people bought shirts. So thank you for that. We should have at least one new design coming there, but we've talking today about several variations on the theme. So look for that as well, perhaps. FMO.com/support is our digital tip jar via PayPal. FMO.com/Amazon is our link to buy books on Booksplode, our Booksplode books. And you can also shop there as well. General shopping link. And bookshop.org is our partner to help local bookstores out. You can find those links on our Booksplode shows as well. Now let's move on. Josh, are you excited? You ready?
I am. I just, while you were talking, can you imagine what happened to me? Because
the,
I went,
the terror. Oh,
fuck, I have to do this. And then I checked my little file to see if I had something. And I do, but unless I say it, you go, you did that already, then we're in trouble.
So the patrons who give the $5 or higher level get a superpower live on the show. And this week, Josh bestows that power.
Wait, hang on a second.
Yeah.
What are you saying about my dead gay grandmother anyway? Are you saying she's not fabulous? She wasn't fabulous. She's the most wonderful human who ever walked the face of the earth.
She looks lovely.
She isn't fabulous, though.
Right. She
looks like an older lesbian from Maine, because that's what she was. Seriously, greatest woman to ever walk the entire face of the earth. My favorite person on earth. Couldn't cook. I'll talk about my grandma any moment. You know I will. Stuart Shuttler. Stuart Shuttler has the ability to tell you exactly what you should buy. You're not sure. You're going to research a product. You're in the store. Should I get this one? Is it on sale? Is it really worth to get it the organic one? I don't know about what the vehicle I should get. There is the black one that's here, but if I wait a little longer and pay a little bit more, I can get the blue one that I want. He's going to settle all those things for you if you ask him. He'll tell you exactly what it is you should buy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's good. Because a lot of times I'm like, this one or this one, you know, you never know.
Yeah, you make your best guess. Stuart inherently understands what is the best choice to do. So like a few years ago, I would have said, you know what? I think I'm going to splurge. I'm going to get the Sony Master Series television. Right. And Stuart would say, you do not want to do that. That thing is going to die on you 12 minutes after the warranty's up. And then you're just going to throw it in a dumpster.
You're never
going to
let that go.
On your
deathbed, you're going to say that fucking Sony TV.
I will never buy another Sony product in my entire life. I will never fly on United Airlines, at least under my own dime, and I will never buy another Sony product.
Will you see a Sony movie?
Yeah, that's a different thing. I can't help that.
What happened with United?
culmination of things, but like a few years, no, it was more than a few years ago, I was flying back from San Francisco for work, and there was like a series of problems getting back, and I had tickets to take my kids to his monster truck show, and just the rampant disinterest in being helpful. I'm pretty good. I know that the people who work in places are doing a job and they have to do it, but it was just like, it was infuriating.
That feels like every airline though.
It is. And I recognize it, but that particular experience put me off the whole thing. My bag got wrecked. Like there was like a metal frame in it and it was all banged up. And they were like, I don't know, nothing we can do about that. Just everything. It all
customer
went wrong.
Customer service went out the window with the pandemic. You think it would have gone the other way, but it went out the window.
Yeah. This was before that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I basically what happened was I got as far as Newark and they couldn't do anything for me. And so I rented a car at 11 p.m. and I drove home overnight.
It's a long drive.
Then took my kids to a monster truck show 2 hours away because I didn't want to miss it for them. And then one of them was sick with the flu that whole time, and it was like 95 degrees outside. It was a rough weekend. But the point is, I'm not flying United again, unless they sponsor the show, and then we'll talk about it.
Well, thanks for being a patron. Yeah, I was going to cross United and Sony off our potential sponsor list.
Yeah.
Stuart Shuttler, thanks for being a patron. Patreon.com/FFanboy. Anyone at the $5 higher level gets some power live on the show. Josh, why don't you read our first email question?
In my mind, I thought we were done. Joshua H. from Australia. I didn't actually mean that wasn't supposed to be an accent. I just fumbled as I was saying the word Australia. Given the last week, pick of the week 880, Connor revealed that he'd gleefully take whatever Faustian deal was offered to him as long as Damian is removed from the DC universe. How would you prefer that deal be handled? A, Damian is removed from DC continuity as if he never was, but we all remember the last 15 years of his comic book existence. B, Damian is removed from DC continuity, but the characters remember him and mourn and mourn and mourn, etc. C, Damian is removed from DC continuity, and all of humanity, both in the comic pages and in our reality, forget he ever was.
Well, I mean, come on, Joshua. That's an easy answer.
You're going with C.
Definitely not two. The last thing you want is this constant unending
morning. No, you don't want that.
I'm fine with A or C, but C is the cleanest one. Just everyone forgets it happened.
I think it has to be A, because if we never knew it, then we cannot learn from it.
That's true. Also, look, we enjoyed those early stories in the Batman and Robin book by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, and I wouldn't want that to go away. So let's go with A. Let's go with A.
Yeah.
We all remember
because
him.
Because the fact is, if you choose C, that's when the genie gets you, because Damian just shows up the next day in the comic book.
That's true. A is the answer. A is the answer, for sure. It's the only way you can do it. You have to, if you're ever going to get rid of him, he has to just be wiped, gone. Because as our colleague Ryan talked about, last time we talked about Damian, if you were to kill him off, losing a son would usurp Bruce's pain of losing his parents, and that would change the character completely.
However, if you were Tom Taylor, you'd say, oh, there's a story there. Because he turns into the Punisher, and literally nobody
can take
him down.
Already ruined the character. Let's do the second email. Andrew M. This is a very international email section. Andrew M. from Spain.
España.
Because many Rick Remender books have recently ended, I'm curious to ask, do you have a favorite Remender book? And yes, we do. I think we have the same book.
Fear Agent.
Fear Agent is our favorite Rick Remender book. Yeah.
Fear Agent.
He's done many really good books over the year. Black Science is second for you. Interesting.
Well, it's very possible I'm forgetting a different one, but I didn't love the 80s Teenage Assassin Deadly Class. That's not my favorite.
Deadly Class. I like Deadly Class a little bit more than Black Science. Number two might be Uncanny Avengers, whatever the book was.
Oh, I was just thinking of like his creator-owned stuff.
That was one of the best sort of Uncanny Avengers was the one he wrote. Uncanny X-Force? No, Uncanny Avengers. No, Uncanny X-Force. Uncanny X-Force,
yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He wrote both, but Uncanny X-Force is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Well, I'll go through some of his titles. Strange Girl, Fear Agent, Black Science, Deadly Class, Low, Tokyo Ghost, 7 to Eternity, Death or Glory, The Scumbag,
Righteous Thirst, Revengeance. I really like The Scumbag.
If I'm just talking about his indie stuff, then it's going to be Fear Agent, Deadly Class, Black Science, Tokyo Ghost.
Barely remember that one.
Then The Scumbag is probably my favorites.
7 to Eternity would never worked for me.
I never made it past.
I actually read a lot of Low. I may have even finished it.
I think I read a couple of maybe two collections.
There was something really cool about it, but it was hard to put a thumb on. Strange Girl was really good, but very
Strange Girl was good.
Early, you know. Yeah.
2005.
Fear Agent is like his great album, like that first not first, but like the first great album that a band does. You know, that's kind of the one that you remember. It's easy to say that with him because he's a punk rock guy. So
2005 to 2007.
That's nothing.
And then 2007, 2011. That was when it was published.
Yeah, but like, just think about it. And just like Tony Moore and Jerome Opeña.
Mike Hawthorne.
Oh, yeah.
Mike and Francisco Macabria.
That's, yeah.
And Kieran Dwyer.
Oh, those are, I mean, those artists are all amazing.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
That's our number one book. If I could recommend any recommender book, it's Fear Agent. It's not like the others.
No.
He got very much into a very similar theme exploration for a while, but mm-hmm. And there are certainly things he explores in this and his anxieties and fears and things. Any artist does, but it also has a hell of a lot of fun to it as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the one we always mention. We haven't talked about it in a long time. We talk about it all the time, but it's been so long. It's been 12 years since it finished. Oh my God, 12 years. Finally, Morgan B. writes, why no legacy numbering in Nightwing? I don't know, Morgan. Ask DC.
Hey, well, here's a question that I had.
Mm-hmm.
Was the Nightwing series always Nightwing? Yes. Or had it been Robin and then turned into Nightwing?
You mean the Chuck Dixon series?
Yeah, I don't know. I just meant before that. I wasn't sure. Like, did Chuck Dixon do Nightwing. Number one?
Yeah, yeah. New number one.
Okay.
He's had several volumes.
Yeah. But does DC... Yeah, they do legacy numbering, but DC, only on for like some the reason, four.
I don't understand. Does legacy numbering on four of their titles that I'm aware of?
The ones from the... They start in the Golden Age. Those are the ones.
Not all of them. Detective and Action makes sense. Then they went to legacy numbering on Wonder Woman and The Flash. In fact, next week is Flash 800.
Huh.
And I assume it's because Wonder Woman and Flash were hitting 800 soon, so they went to those. But like,
right.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like,
not Superman and Batman?
Nope. Just those four. Batman's still on the New 52 numbering, and I don't know what... Superman's just started over the new number one recently.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I think from some of the solicitation art we've seen from the... Like the reboot, like Wonder Woman's getting a new series. I think they're doing legacy numbering on that going forward, where they're going to have like number one on the cover, but you know, number 60801 mm-hmm. on the legacy number. I don't know. I don't know why they do those. I assume it's because Action and Detective Comics are like the originals, so they do that. But
so would be Batman and Superman.
They brought those numberings back years ago when they were about to hit 1,000, if you recall, mm-hmm. and they just kept it going. Wonder Woman and Flash, I assume because they're both hitting 800 this month. But the other ones, I don't know why they don't do them.
When was Batman? When was Batman number one?
Originally?
40? Yeah.
1940.
40. Okay. A few years after.
He appeared in 39 in Detective Comics. I think it was the next year he got his own book.
Right. That's amazing. You know how long ago that was?
A long time.
Just amazing.
And yet not.
True.
Less than 100 years.
But even the fact that it's close to 100 years. Like, when you were a kid, 100 years prior was in the 1800s.
Right.
Sorry, I can't do this age math thing. It'll mess me up bad.
It's weird though, Morgan. I mean, the sort of I mean, I get it's not totally random, but you know, I think they're going to take the page out of Marvel's playbook, and if these things I've seen are correct, and they're going to.
I mean, it's always there. Like they can do it at any point. They know where they are. You know, it's they take it or leave it. You know, it's just where
I'm pretty sure. Because next week starts, I think the official sort of Dawn of DC Batman, the next issue, and I don't know if they're going to do legacy numbering on that or not.
Wouldn't it be funny if the reason on Nightwing is because they literally don't know? Like, there was a mistake. We tried. We had a team working on it. The math just didn't work. We don't know. So we can't.
The biggest loss to the comics community continues to be comic book database. That was the biggest loss. Fucking Amazon took it and buried it. I don't blame the guys for selling. So... Nightwing, the original Nightwing. Well, I mean, there's been a lot of volumes. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of volumes of it.
They're up to, what are they, in the 80s now on this one? This is the new 52?
No, 104.
Right, okay, so.
104 was last week.
Yeah, maybe Tom Taylor took over in the
80s. In the 90s, there was a volume that went...
One-third? Like, it was up there. It was over 100.
Oh, yeah, the Chuck Dixon one went over, but I'm trying to figure if there's more than one volume. No, the first volume, the Chuck Dixon one went 153 issues. I mean, a long time. And then, I guess it's only been the two volumes. So it's been 153 plus 104.
Hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah. Seems like it might be higher, but yeah.
I don't know. It's been a lot of issues in Nightwing. You know, we used to be pro renumbering, but you grow and you change and your opinions change. And
whatever. It is what it is. I don't care. I don't care as long as the other number is available. So I can say, wow, 500
issues. Such great history of seeing.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, that's it.
Doctor Strange number 429 versus Doctor Strange was the number 3 or whatever it is this week.
Well, the newer rebooted numbers don't mean anything. They don't give you any sense of history. They don't let you know how long this has been around.
Continuity
has changed. Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for writing in, Joshua, Andrew, and Morgan. Contact@ifanboy.com is how you can write in. And you can also write in for our Media Explode show. Just put Media Explode in the title. So our other podcast that we mentioned earlier this past week, we had our Media Explode show where we talked about Return of the Jedi. It was the 40th anniversary. Josh and Ron went to see it in theaters. I watched it again on Disney Plus, and we talked about it. It was a super fun discussion.
Oh, I'm afraid your podcast will be quite downloadable by the time Fritz arrive.
Fucking movie's so awesome. Next week, we should have a review of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. We're working all that stuff out. There's a lot of movies coming out the next 8 weeks, so we're trying to figure all that scheduling out. But the plan is to have a review for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And then in 2 weeks, we'll be back with another Media Explode. We have to squeeze it in there. We're going to be talking about the series finales of Ted Lasso and Succession and Barry and maybe The Flash, and sort of a roundup of a bunch of big shows that we've been following.
Shit, I knew I had to finish Barry, but I didn't know I had to finish Ted Lasso.
Well, geez, man. Yeah.
The playoffs, man. They screwed it all up.
I forgot
about it, though.
And the problem with that is that Ted Lasso jumped from 30 minutes to an hour this season.
Oh, God damn it. God damn
13
it.
13 episodes, too. So there you go. Those are coming up, and we got a bunch of shows. There'll be a Flash review, and we'll figure it out as we get closer.
Friends, you can find our library of over 1,300 shows and counting, or 26 series of 50 shows each at ifanboy.com, wherever you get your podcasts, those kind of places. You can follow us at ifanboycomics on Instagram, where Connor and I are individually C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanning. And under that ifanboy account, you will find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. There will be a post there that say, hey, the show's out, in case you didn't know or you don't have your podcast app set to automatically download. And let me ask you why you don't have that going on. You probably have unlimited data by now, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's true.
Sometimes there's the best of the week in panels. There's the clinging remains of our social media presence.
Probably not this week. I'm just guessing.
Yes. Well, listen, if he did it, he would put up Ben Grimm's butt. That would be the best thing there. End of story.
I might sneak that one in. I'm sick and I've got baseball tickets on Saturday. I'm hoping to be good enough to go to that. So I may not be able to do it. Saturday's my day to do it. And if I'm gone Saturday, it's over. Maybe I'll do it Friday night. Who knows? But how I feel. Oh, subscribe to youtube.com/ifanboy. That's where you'll find all of our old video shows. And we post this show there every week as well. So if you want to, there's a lot of Fear Agent content on that channel. Fuck. I stopped using that word for so long. There's a lot of Fear Agent shows. I know for sure we talked about the collections. Did we do a show on Fear Agent? I can't remember.
We must have. And if we didn't.
We might have.
We did. We must have.
Anyway, if you're at all curious, we talked about that on the old shows. And consider leaving a review or star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts, wherever they come into your ears, consider leaving us a review. Ew. I do appreciate that. Yeah, I didn't. That just came out that way. We moved past it. Thank you for listening. I'm going to now stop talking because it hurts.
First of all, I played a little ruse at the beginning of the show because I was not looking forward to talking about it, but I also knew I would love my comics. And then by the end of it, I would be very happy. And I was anticipating that transformation and it happened. And I'm very happy about that.
Good.
So let's see. I work in a place that deals with electricity.
Ooh.
As a concept. There's electrical engineers and things like that. They use the word load a lot.
Uh-oh.
And a lot of times I'm working remotely most of the time, and you'll hear somebody, one of them has an accent, and he just keeps saying load, load, and I try not to laugh. I was in the office last week, and there was a call. Somebody used the phrase drop a load, and I had the smallest smirking reaction. And the person next to me goes, I have been trying not to laugh at that for 15 years and you are screwing it up. And then I couldn't rein it in.
It happens.
Yeah. Drop a load. It's a problem.
It would have been funny if it was a Boston accent, but I understand.
He did have that. I just can't do it as well.
I understand.
He has a magnificent, not Boston, but like Sudbury, like a outer, like Andover accent. Oh, it's so good. Are we done?
Yeah, I guess that's a very special glimpse into your workday, which I guess we all enjoyed.
You guess we did?
I guess we did.
You can only speak for you.
I enjoyed it.
That's all I go for.
I can only assume. We can wait and find out from the people.
I'm pretty sure that because it was Purient, like it included like a dirty word, like a drop a load, and then laughing at a meeting. We've all laughed at a meeting before.
You're just ruining culture wherever you go.
Yeah, I can't help it. The culture did it to me. I'm just reacting to it.
All right. Well, until next week, I'm going to be coming back healthier and stronger than ever. My name is Connor.
Unless you're not, in which case this is your last show. And, you know, this would be pretty awful if this is how I ended it. But let's hope.
So it is what it is.
It's most likely, I think. I don't know the math on this, but you'll probably be fine.
I hope so. I think so.
I know, though. I really do hope so. I want you to be okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I love you.
Bye-bye. I love you, too. Bye.
Raise your kids. In fact, it's cold as hell, and there's no one there to raise them. If you did.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.